From WUOT News, it's The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. In this installment of The Method, we're going to go way back to society's earliest days. You're probably familiar with the crude art early humans painted on cave walls. To an anthropologist, it's known as rock art, and some of the oldest known rock art in North America is right here in Tennessee. WUOT's Chrissy Kuiper spoke with Dr. Jan Schimmick to find out how archaeologists are studying those scrawls drawn by primitive hands.
We have a couple of sites, one in particular, that have very early dates for cave art in the dark zone of caves. We make a distinction between artwork that actually is exposed to exterior light and artwork that's deep underground. And in Tennessee, some of the art is over a mile underground. The reason we make that distinction is it becomes a technical problem to go to these places where they're decorating it, and they have to provision themselves with light. It's not a place where people live. It's a place that they intentionally go, so it's almost an act of pilgrimage at the outset to go to these places. The earliest example of that we have is a cave that's actually not very far from Knoxville that was discovered 4 or 5 years ago, in fact, and dated 4 or 5 years ago to something over 6,000 years ago. That's quite early. It probably is the oldest cave art that we know of in North America. It's not the oldest rock art. We're claiming the oldest cave art. One of the reasons that's probably true that it's in Tennessee is we also have, you know, the vast majority of the cave art in North America. Here, we now know it was a tradition. We now have 70 caves that have artwork here in Tennessee, North Alabama, North Georgia, Kentucky has a few, the Virginias, but concentrated in the Southeast. And that's far and away the largest scale evidence for this practice of going deep underground and decorating caves anywhere in North America. There are a few rare examples out west.
How do you go about dating these?
So the most straightforward way, the preferred way if we can do it, is what's called direct dating, where you actually take a sample of the material and date it. The 6,000 plus date that we have is actually a direct date from a charcoal pictograph inside of a cave. And we were able to scrape a tiny little bit of the carbon from the wall. We hate to do that, but we did it because we weren't sure that this was actually prehistoric. We submitted it for radiocarbon dating to a laboratory that uses a technique called AMS dating. It's very precise, and you can use very small quantities, and they were able to get enough carbon to make a date on it. What that tells us is not necessarily that the picture is 6,000 years old, but that the charcoal in the paint is. We did some tests on the rock around it to see if it was being contaminated. We don't think it was. There's always a chance somebody picked up an old burnt stick later in time and made it. That's not really likely, but it's always possible. So direct dates are really the best and most sure way. Lacking those, and we often do, we try to get material that we can radiocarbon date that's associated with it. In order to go into caves and make artwork, people had to carry light sources with them. We know that Native Americans in this part of the Southeast most often used river cane as their torch material. This is all the way up into the historic period. In a lot of these caves, we find literally piles of river cane, burnt river cane, lying around on the surface where the torches would burn down like cigarettes do and the ashes would fall off. We take some of that and date it. Now, we're not dating the pictures on the wall, but we are dating time periods when people were in there visiting the sites. You know, it's a puzzle. You're putting together pieces, and they don't fit necessarily together as well as you would like them to, but
sure.
We're left with what we're left with.
Dr. Jan Schimmick speaking with WUOT's Chrissy Kuiper. Living with HIV and AIDS can be difficult even under the best of circumstances. For AIDS patients in Appalachia, the fight is made even tougher by poverty, sparse medical treatment options, and cultural stigmas. A project uniting researchers in Tennessee and Alabama will look at those factors and others to try to understand how end-of-life care can be improved for people who need it the most. For that story, we'll turn to University of Tennessee nursing professor Joanne Hall.
The incidence of HIV in southern Appalachia is probably much higher than people might expect. It's higher than the national average, both in Tennessee and Alabama. That's one problem. And then accessibility of services is really unknown for this group. In fact, the very, you know, needs that they anticipate for or have now for end-of-life care just has not been studied in Southern Appalachia. So we planned the study to assess, first of all, the needs through basically interviewing people. And the second part of the study is to actually use technology to locate the actual end-of-life service sites that have the intention of providing end-of-life care services.
In what ways do you plan to factor in cultural stigmas and cultural perceptions or misperceptions into your research and how it will form the way you do your research?
Well, I mean, the simple answer is we will ask directly. There will be interviews, face-to-face interviews with 20 individuals in Tennessee and 20 individuals in Alabama in order to get some variety or diversity. And we, in these face-to-face interviews, we will be directly asking about the needs, and we will be also directly asking about, well, what has your experience been in the community in terms of being accepted or included? So there are just a pretty long series of questions we ask that look at their environment as well as their personal situation, because we're kind of, this is kind of an intersection of the person environment is sort of the location of the study.
So the study is expected to take at least 2 years to complete. What happens at the end of the 2 years? How would you like this information, once the data have been gathered, to be used by the medical community?
Well, I think there'll be first an informative aspect, because these needs are not known in this population. I think there will be also a possibly a transferable effect of the findings to maybe similar situations or similar locales in the United States. I don't think only this area would benefit from the knowledge. And there will be, I think, stimulating and facilitating further research. And in practice, of course, we would want to have this get back to people who are involved in end-of-life care and just the whole array of services, because it's you know, there isn't really a specialized end-of-life service, but rather it's a function of every healthcare facility.
Joanne Hall is a professor in the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. She and her colleagues in both Tennessee and Alabama will be conducting a 2-year study exploring the end-of-life needs for patients with HIV and AIDS in Appalachia. Dr. Hall, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
That's The Method from WUOT News. You can listen to this episode or any of our previous episodes at WUOT.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.